Greetings, space burgers. As you've elected to call yourselves by voting at thespacecave.com, the voting is over. It is officially the name of those of you who choose to listen to the podcast. And so I'll refer to you as that when I see you, or I guess when I'm addressing you through the show, space burgers, who are in fact charismatic megafauna. I know that was a late addition. Some of you voted for that. It was kind of, I don't know if it was gaining ground, but you can be both. Your term is space burgers, but you're it's that you what you are, I guess, is, oh god, sorry, I'm a little weary. Been on the road, different places to stay every night. It's been really fun, but I feel like I'm a little scattered because of it. Thanks to people who've been coming out to shows, it's been great. I mean, seeing the United States, it's real pretty. We did the Duluth show and screened One-Headed Beast there, which is, if you go to davidhuntsberger.com, there's a link to pre-order that on Vimeo if you're interested in seeing that. It's an animation stand-up special that I made last year through Kickstarter with a bunch of really talented animators. And so we screened that live, and that was received real well. And then I did the 10,000 Laughs Festival in Minneapolis. Real cool to see some friendly faces there. And got a chance to sit down with Kyle McGinn and record an episode about poetry. That'll be out, I don't know, a few weeks or so. And had some beers along the way. We moved from there to Cincinnati, and I forgot to write down what the local one there was, but it was good. That's really helpful. Saw Jeff Tate, thanks to him, and Billy DeVore for putting together the show, or helping put together the show there, and the people that came out. It was a good one. Yeah, Nashville was real fun. I got to stay an extra night there, thanks to Zanies, and thanks to Dylan and Jessica, who came out to that show, and other people did too, but it was nice chatting with them afterward. And talking about music, and thanks for the CD. They gave us a CD of this band, The Lonely Wild. So maybe I'll play a track from that at the end. I don't know if I've got the rights to it, but hopefully they're cool with it, because they're great. So we listened to that, and real good road tripping music. And then got to hang out an extra night in Nashville and go honky tonking, and saw these two guys that play just acoustic guitar. And if you know me, I like country gold. I like old country. I can't stand this new stuff, which makes me sound 1,000 years old. But it really is dreadful. And I could go on ranting about what I think it means to. It's an embodiment of like this. I'm not going to do justice to this. But the idea that music should be something that binds people together. And old country music, like any genre, the blues or jazz or whatever it may be, that has like kind of an aesthetic to it, a tradition, a history, people from all walks of life can like it and be like, well, we disagree politically, we disagree this way or that way, but we can all agree this is a good song. Country music used to be that way, except now this new stuff that's all about trucks and where I'm from makes me better than you because I grew up a certain way, and it really is starting to just create, I am this way because I listen to this music, because I vote this way, because I think this way, and that's frustrating. That and I'm not doing any justice to that notion. I'm a little out of it. I apologize, but you get the idea. There's something there. So anyway, we saw these guys, young guys that play just a bunch of old country hits, but then they played some original stuff too, called the Steelheads. So I'm gonna try to get a song or two from them to play down the road. They're really talented, and I think you would dig it even if you don't like country. And then from Nashville, went to Atlanta, thanks to Devin and Rebecca. Tribeca for coming out, and I keep singling people out. There are more people there than that, but they hung out and chatted afterward. In Atlanta, there were not a ton of people. 10:30 on a Thursday proved to be kind of a tough proposition, but to those people that did come out, thank you. It was I enjoyed it. I thought it was nice, and thanks to the Village Theater. And the tour moves on. I'm recording this right before the New Orleans show, so I don't know how that one went, but I'll fill in later. And I don't know if anyone's even remotely interested in that, but I'm filling some time here at the beginning of the show. Most recently, the last couple days, I was in Pas Christian, Mississippi at a wedding. So here, I want to real quickly check in with another guest who was there. So let's do that now.
Hello?
Dr. Burrell.
How's it going?
Good, dude. You're on the space cave.
I'm on the space cage?
Space cave, dude. You're talking in the space cave.
Oh, sweet. I'm driving around New Orleans in the rain.
Yeah, it was intense. We walked around, and it was pretty hectic.
It is pretty. It's, like, windy and raining, and we were going to go to the World War II Museum, but it closes in an hour, so... halfway there.
Oh, is it real far out of town or something?
No, we just were kind of slow making our plans.
Oh. Because you could have gotten in like an hour at the museum.
Yeah, we called and they said that it was like $20 and it was too late to like make it worth it or something.
Oh, yeah, we did that in Tennessee, I believe. There was a cave museum and... it was like a 2-hour tour, and it was also very expensive.
Yeah. Speaking of caves, Kara's number one place in the world now to go visit is going to be Vietnam, because they found some new, really awesome caves.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those down there where they have whole forests and stuff. I've seen photos of them.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. Did Lake just make her podcasting debut?
I think, did you hear her? She's been...
Yeah, yeah.
Here, let me put up the phone.
Okay.
Can you say hi? And she just wants to grab it. I think she made it. Hi. Can you sing? Can you sing?
You're just talking on the phone.
She's just trying to grab it.
I love at the rehearsal dinner when she grabbed that ketchup and was just sucking on public ketchup, the whole bottle.
Gotta get her antibodies somehow.
Yeah, yeah. And it'll behoove other people when they come along and use that ketchup that has baby saliva on. That was really funny.
She's working up a good fuss right now, though, so she'll probably make a debut.
This is pretty riveting podcasting we're doing.
Well, yeah, tell me about this podcast a little bit more. So you broke off from Professor Blastoff.
No, no one broke off. It ended, you know.
You broke it up single-handedly.
I single-handedly broke it apart. I couldn't handle it anymore. And, and then I forged out into the world like a total diva with my own thing.
Yeah, that's right. Glad I got that confession out of you finally.
Yeah, yeah. What are you up to? You're in school. You'll be graduating in May.
So yeah, when I left, I had about 2 years left and 2 summers included. So I had a long way to go. But now I see some light at the end of the tunnel, and it just feels really good to finally be so close. And like an idiot, smart people, we decided to have our second kid right before I graduate. So I get all the little ones out of the way.
Yeah.
Then maybe wait another 5 years and see how that goes. But yeah, not planned, but it'll be good timing. It'll force me for sure to not drag my feet when I graduate to get a job right away.
Well, you look like you've lost a little weight. Are you cutting back on the Twix?
Cutting back on the Twix. I have to walk around campus. Probably somebody said it was the biggest campus in the country. I don't know if that's true, but like it is a good mile. Or 2 miles to our... we live on campus, and it's like 2 miles, a 20-minute walk to our apartment, which I don't do all the time, but...
Yeah, but it looks like... Yeah, you look like you're getting more steely-eyed and serious about it. You got this family to take care of. It felt like you're more... you're less soft.
Well, it's a lot nicer to have the structure of day-to-day, going to class, having things due, throwing in like an all-nighter here and there makes you feel more productive. Whereas in LA, it was just kind of like a lot of things are just up in the air. You're kind of waiting for things to happen and not really in control of your destiny as much.
Yeah.
I guess take more control. But it's kind of hard in the comedy world because you're waiting on a lot of things to kind of come together.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing if things will work out, but with school, it's just you just put your head down and just grind away at it.
And that's your thing, grinding.
Yeah, I'm a grinder.
And how's wife?
Wife's good. She's right here. Say hello.
Hey.
Hello. Good seeing you. It was fun at the wedding.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Yeah.
It was a good occasion to meet back up after a year and a half.
Yeah, it was. It was so cool with that, the band and everything. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Everything was, like, very Southern. It was really cool. All the food and the entertainment and the decor and connections. It was really cool.
Yeah.
No pictures, though. We were asked not to take pictures. So.
Yeah. So hopefully they got one of us all back together. the reunion tour.
I almost went up to the photographers and was like, all right, can I direct you to take a few pictures?
They would have, because I talked to what was her name, Maggie at the end, and she was a Blastoff listener.
So that would have worked out.
Yeah. So maybe she snapped some weird together, but I don't know that we were ever all together with Tig, and then Kyle wasn't able to make it, so...
Yeah, stupid Kyle. I'm really looking forward to seeing Kyle. I was like, totally just assumed he was going to come, and then a couple days ago, I was like, you coming to the wedding, right? He's like, no, I got this Godfather thing. And I was like,
yeah.
That's a bummer.
I know.
We'll have to take another trip out to L.A. I said this was my graduation present coming out here, but maybe when I graduate, we'll make a special trip. For another job interview or something.
Yeah. Come do the junk show.
Yeah, the copper steel. Sorry, we missed that last. We missed that by like one night last time.
I'll never forgive you.
I know. We gotta plan better. Our daughter's laughing.
Yeah, she gets it. She's sharp. I won't keep you guys while you're visiting and exploring lovely New Orleans, but I'll see you tonight at the show, right? You're going to do a set?
Yeah. So what's the venue again?
The New Movement Theater.
The New Movement Theater. All right. We will make it. And it's at 9 p.m., right?
Yes, correct.
All right. Sounds good. We will see you there.
All right, buddy. See you later.
All right. Good talking to you.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So some of you might, if you did listen to Professor Blastoff, you would be familiar with Aaron, and it was good to see him and Kara, wife, good to see him and wife, and their little girl Lake, and cool to know that they have a new baby on the way. Breaking Space Cave news, there is a new Burrell baby, and Aaron did a set on the show in New Orleans. I don't know, again, I haven't done the show yet, so I don't know how it went, but I'll report back. All right, well, let's get to the portion of the show that is actually prepared, and this one I was not out traveling, so my wits are about me to some degree, or as much as they can be, as I finish up, conclude chatting with my good friend from Austin, Carrie Lindo, chatting a little bit more about chemical engineering and just, learning and what we're trying to figure out about the world and how we do it on such a tiny level with DNA, and I think you'll like it. So here you go. Here's me and Carrie. More podcasting with Larry Kindo, drinking Shinerbach from Shiner, Texas, not from Austin, but this is what we would have frequently in Austin, mm-hmm. hanging out. Really feels, going to the Horseshoe, which is no longer there, mm-hmm. That was the best bar in the world. That was my fifth.
I only went there once when you were back in town.
That's where I would always go. It was the best place to just be like, I will be there all day. Come by and say hello.
It was great. It just was a great place.
Shuffleboard. It's so weird in a bar like that where it's just old and dingy And yet everyone was welcome. You'd see like a lot of different ethnicities, mm-hmm. a lot of different
not credit
ages.
Cards.
No credit cards, cash only. And you could bring in your own booze, but it was only just beer, mm-hmm. mostly canned beer. You see a lot of different ages, a lot of different socioeconomic statuses in the world mm-hmm. represented there, which I like.
Yeah, I do love a bar like that, where it's really a variety great. Of people. It's not just all yeah. people that are your age who like the same music as you do.
Yeah. And going during the day, especially like those days when we would go and just kind of be there lounging around mm-hmm. most of the day. You know, there's never loud. There's never, you know, who is that person? Yeah. What's that group? You know, it's really like a place where people could go and kind of hold themselves accountable and just be like, we're adults. We're out hanging out. There's no reason to be loud and wooing and high-fiving. One guy did yell at me and a friend of mine once in a shuffleboard tournament. And he was like barking and marching around, and that was really uncomfortable. But other than that, people get heated in shuffleboard. It gets intense. Mm-hmm. But that place being so bare bones and like minimal, and yet the shuffleboard table was like laser level, perfectly smooth, no chips in it. It was like they ran a Zamboni over it after each thing, the way they would salt it, and then you could you know, sweep it off and salt it yourself, and man, the best.
Do they not have a lot of shuffleboard in Los Angeles?
They have a lot of short tables, or it always feels like more of a novelty. Mm-hmm. Whereas that one felt like it was built by gypsies of 100 years ago or something. A lot of them now, it's fake wood, and there's some built-in sort of electronic system above them that makes it feel like you're at Chuck E. Cheese or something like that.
Do they, God, what was I going to say? I don't remember what I was going to say.
Those shiners are getting to
something
you.
Something about shuffleboard, I don't know. Well, oh, have you ever played regular, like full shuffleboard?
Oh, no, with the sticks?
Yeah.
No, and that, you know, when you grow up, you see that as like, that's what old people do. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet it's so fun.
I bet it's so fun. Like, why don't bars have that?
They should, maybe they can't, maybe it's too expensive, the overhead, the space you have to give up for it or something. Like a cruise ship seems like a good place. So, we got this deck space.
I think I've seen it in Central Park. I think that's the only time I've seen people actually play shuffleboard.
Yeah, because it's kind of cool for people under age 50 to go out and play bocce ball.
Yeah, I was going to say, bocce ball is very similar.
But I prefer bocce ball as older gentlemen, 65 and up, Italian, throwing it around and just kind of like, well, I don't know what they're drinking,
that's
wine or something.
That's how I remember Atlantic City. There's a lot of guys in like, you know, white undershirts playing bocce ball next to the boardwalk.
Yeah, and
kind of thing.
That's the next, I think it's become a cool kid sport now. Like, I think croquet tried to do it a while ago.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't really take.
I like them both. My boyfriend's dad has a bocce ball court, and we were playing, and I was like, this should be in every Austin bar, but it's
heavy and it's clunky, and if you don't have a soft landing place for it, it just something. I don't know.
I played once on like a very hilly surface. It was kind of fun. It was like all terrain bocce. It's like a different kind of thing.
I think I would really prefer, I wish they just had kind of like that shuffle with the sticks, but for curling. Mm-hmm. So it was as ping pong is to tennis. I wish it was like that for table shuffleboard. No sticks. Mm-hmm. You kind of just run a little bit and throw these big plates out there.
One of my biggest regrets of college is never playing broom ball.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
Like, that's on an ice skating rink, but it's just like brooms and a puck. And you're just like, you're on with your shoes, like shuffling around. It sounds so fun. There's a couple times where I almost played broom ball. To me, that sounds like so fun. Slipping and sliding like an idiot.
I
just
don't
sounds
like
fun.
The sensation of ice and like, I want to go this way and having to do the quick scuttly feet.
But you're in your sneakers. You're not on ice skates for broom ball.
That's what I mean. I don't want to be on ice in my sneakers.
Oh, I
do. Slipping all over the place and wobbling
maybe
around.
I just like people falling. That sounds fun to me.
Ice just seems like the ultimate recipe for and playing a game with no traction. It's just a concussion festival. I don't think
you go that fast though. I think this.
But
is
if
the
you
thing
fall, I mean, if you just fall and hit your head on the ice,
I think you're falling so slowly though. You can put your hands down.
You must be really bundled, I guess. So you fall like on your elbow. It doesn't hurt.
I mean, I think you're just falling so slowly. You're like sliding down.
What?
It's like slow motion. It's
how
not like you're going because you're not going very fat, so therefore you fall.
If you are standing on ice and your feet slip out from under you, it's not a slow fall. Gravity doesn't just suddenly go, come on.
Well,
down.
I think you kind of shuffle back and forth. I don't know. I feel like it's. I never played, so I don't know. I could tell you more,
you're
but I
just
was
being crazy.
Lazy and just downloading stuff on Napster and not going to my broom ball games.
Napster.
But I think I'm finally at a point where I like understand that I don't like going ice skating when it's like, yeah, hey, let's go ice skating.
I'm not good at it.
I think every 3 years I'm like, yeah, that sounds fun, and then it's like, no, this hurts my ankles, and it's not very fun. And like, some friends are over there, and some are over there. It's just like, why are we doing this? I'm just getting sweaty in a big puffy jacket.
Yeah, I don't care. Where are you doing this?
Different places, man. I mean, you know, I mean, I go home to Philly for the holidays, so they have it in Philadelphia, New York, but they have it in Austin at the Whole Foods.
Oh. Yeah, I know. They do it in Reno sometimes. It
I
looks
think
really
do it at
charming.
Vibe on 6th Street.
They do it at the Vibe. You're always welcome. It rebranded itself as an ice skating rink. That's classic
it's a
Vibe.
Hipster ice skating rink.
So Austin's changed. It's more expensive now. Everything changes and is different, and everyone's life is different. Mm-hmm. And you're not a scientist anymore. You don't work. You just do comedy and living in Austin, just living kind of like a comedian's life, which is so weird that you get into that kind of current where people just kind of bounce around to different jobs and somehow always stay kind of afloat, and yet
Something just seems to pop up every month. It's never the same thing. Something else always just pops up.
Yeah, there's a weird thing living hand to mouth, and I bet as a parent, like we were talking about before, being like an expecting mother and just being so worried, and then you see your kid come out into the world, and if they told you, like, I want to be an artist, you'd be so worried. And then after a while, you'd go, once you, like, enter into that stream, you just kind of get carried around. Mm-hmm. And very few people end up completely homeless, miserable. You might be broke and miserable and barely making your rent every month. But somehow or another, like, people tend to do it.
You get a credit card, you're fine.
Just wait for that huge break, rack up a ton of debt.
I know people always like, so how do you make money? It's like, ugh, it's just different every month. Whatever dumb thing comes along.
Dude, you miss science? I mean, you still pay attention to science, look into it?
Yeah, actually, I have a subscription to Popular Science, which was very disappointing because it's more just like the car of the future. You're like, this is not what I want.
Yeah, science gets lumped in. It's such a bastardized word in a lot of ways where, because science is the most. It's the universe. I mean, it really is to use that term like universal. A science is in some way applicable to nearly everything. You could say sports are a science. There's a lot of physics involved and inertia and momentum and kinesiology and endless physiology. And but popular science just becomes more about tech and not
really. It's like the poor man's Wired. It's not even like I feel like Wired has more science in it than popular science.
And Wired is just a lot more prevalent because they do a lot of online content, which is where people are. So people are, and then to get the magazine on top of that, which is more in-depth things or,
I feel like the science in there is more in-depth than the science in popular science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Wired is really like the ultimate kind of where we are with science. It's really got its finger on the pulse. Yeah. I might be
Nova
wrong.
Nova is still really good. I feel like that was one of the early inspirations, was I would watch Nova all the time. And they still got it.
PBS.org, a lot of free Nova stuff you can watch on there. And a lot of great content. I love it. And like when I'm watching it, it's sometimes frustrating to me to that almost like you reach, and I'm still pretty young, but I feel like you reach a content capacity where you're like, I don't know what new is going in, that it just gets tacked onto different piles of stuff. You kind of like, well, this is what little I know about evolution. I read this new article. This little bit gets tacked onto that pile. And not to say that I know too much. I just mean my brain is starting to like limit the amount of retention that you're kind of like, what do I really know about any of this? I wish I could kind of strip a lot of it away and just boil it down to the core. Okay, I need to know these five things and build from there.
I think that's kind of the problem with like how we're not in like a specialized specialized field anymore. Like, I'm not still learning science. Like, if you're a professor, you'd be on top of all that stuff.
And yeah.
Kind of as a comic, it's just kind of like, oh, read about anything.
When I first got into comedy, I feel like I approached it in the way you should in any field, which is always be thinking about it, always be creating it, but also be very aware of what everyone else is doing. So you know that what you're doing is at least attempting to be its own thing. But then I started to feel like you get a little mired down in that. Mm-hmm. And if you're totally unaware, you might have some parallel thinking or you might cross a stream, but you can do it knowing and like, I didn't see that. I didn't know it. It's hopefully people will forgive me.
Yeah,
but
there's no way to keep track of every joke everyone's making.
Not at all. But I would guess as a scientist, I mean, if you're teaching it, if you're reading articles, if you're staying current online and knowing what's going on every month, you really have to be passionate about it to...
Yeah.
And you're still, like, you're more of like an enthusiast now.
Yeah. One of my most interesting professors, who's really, really old, and he kind of, God, what did I have him for? I had my senior year. I don't remember what I had him for. It had something to do with genetics and diseases and something. It might have been like the genetics of disease or something like that. And we talked about disorders a lot, I remember. I remember we talked about Woody Guthrie a lot because he had Huntington's disease. But I remember he had an interesting thing where we had to write a paper. Kind of, you had to pick one way, arguing pro or con, you know, cancer is caused by mutation.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like an eye-opening thing where it's like, oh, you know, it was kind of like, hey, what you're learning, we don't know if this is right. And, like, you know, he kind of went over, like, all the things that were wrong in the past, like, 50 years. That not just, like, you know, the sun and the moon, the way we revolve, but, like, just recent things were always breakthroughs. So it was kind of like an eye-opening thing, like, oh, yeah, all the stuff we're learning may mean nothing in a few years.
And, I remember with the... And I just saw The Theory of Everything a while ago, which oddly enough, a little side note to that, there's a, like the final frame of the movie. I don't know if the graphic design yet is done for this podcast or not, but like what I sent the girl was like fairly similar in concept to that. So when I saw that, I was like, whoa, that is really, it's probably been done before that. But when I saw it, I was like, that's really, it's really strange.
Again,
like
movie.
Parallel kind of. It's you know, I liked it. There were parts of it where I was like, I don't know how familiar I am with his life, but I felt like there were parts that I was familiar with where I was like, oh, they totally skipped that. Or the book's better, man. But you know, him convincing people, circling the whole physics community into black holes and Hawking radiation, and then years later kind of being like, I changed my mind, I'm going to get, and everyone kind of circles back the other way, all right, wherever you're leading us, man. And I like that science does that, but I also then think proving these gigantic math equations that's it, turn a corner and say this proves that this is possible, and yet it doesn't really mean this is certain, and all of science kind of shifts and goes, all right, we now believe pretty concretely cancer is a mutation, and then everyone goes, oh, okay, yeah, well, there's enough research showing that. And then years later, they go, oh, it turns out it's not. It's something else.
Yeah, it was definitely like one of the first professors was like, oh, okay, I see how you're viewing us. And oddly, it was like all my classes, I did not attend a lot. I remember running into a friend and being like, oh, you know, what are we doing in that class? I haven't been a while. And he was like, what? I was like, what do you mean what? He's like, the professor, he died like during the semester. Oh, and I was an idiot, didn't go, so didn't know that. He's like, oh, yeah, we don't have that class anymore.
How long had you been skipping class?
I skipped class a lot. I mean, it might have just been like 2 weeks, or it might have been like a Tuesday, Thursday.
Two straight weeks of not going to class. And you got
a job. It's like Tuesday, Thursday, so it might have been like 3 or 4 classes I skipped.
Oh, I see. I get it. Okay.
And like, it was one of those things where he didn't give like quizzes in class, so I knew I could kind of just like. I mean, he was cool, and I kind of was like, oh, I can kind of just a lot of my classes, I would just like. Read independently and be able to take the test. Like, I had a bad attention span where I didn't always...
Are you kind of like a savant?
No.
Are you one of those kids that, like, because they do this in the theory
I think it was, like, if the professor wasn't really interesting, my brain would, like, go somewhere else and I wouldn't even be thinking doing it. So, but I would still have to go and read about it very intensely to learn it. Like, but I think I do do better just reading on my own to learn something than listening to someone tell it to me, unless they are super interesting or a hot guy. No, just kidding.
I would have loved to have been in a class with you, because I was always enamored with people like that, that could just kind of stroll in, maybe a notebook at best, and just sit there and kind of watch the class, and then maybe not come again for a while, and then always do great on the test. And I would always be perplexed by that. Like, you know, I think a lot of understanding, like, how to learn and how to get the information you need, I was still getting accustomed to that in college. If they told you, like, you got to show up every day, you got to take notes, and then I would show up every day and take notes, and then I'd look back over those notes, and really, it was like a foreign language almost. Yeah. Like, I don't really know what I'm learning.
I would never look at those notes again. Like, I would take notes and never look at the math. Especially math. Like, I just need to look at the problem. Like,
I had a hard time
deal with people showing me out. It's like, all right, I have to look at it, try to figure it out, see how one's done. And
do you think you would have done better? I always felt like college, because one, they're there all the time, whether it's a TA or whoever's teaching it, they expect you to know almost like you're a professional, I guess, because you're paying to be there. They assume you are.
Yeah.
You know what you're taking. So for me, I would take a class called like statics or something like that. It's just like static forces on objects. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what statics is. And never at the beginning of the semester did the TA or the professor come in and go, here's what I'm going to teach you, and this is what this class is about. They just instantly start drawing, you know, vectors and things and going, this is a vertical force, and there's also, you break this horizontal thing, and they're just off. You're just off going. So, like, I would take the notes and never really approach it from, like, a learning standpoint. Like, what am I learning? What am I trying to learn here? I would just like, well, I'm doing what they say. I'm taking the notes. You seem like you were approaching it with like, I gotta learn this. I like this. I want to know this. It doesn't matter if I take notes. It doesn't matter if I show up.
Well, I mean, some of the classes it was, I wanted to learn it, and some of it was just like, I need to get a D so I pass and can graduate.
Yeah. That's how I was. It feels kind of freeing to do that. Like, what's the minimum I have to do here?
I can remember, senior year, I think it was physical chemistry 2, being in the professor's office, like, can you grade my test so I know if I graduate? I was like, and I needed a D, and, like, we were both into it, and, like, I got a D, and we, like, high fives. Like, yeah, I got a D. Like, that's all I needed.
That must have been a high note in that person's tenure.
I know.
High-fiving a student for getting a D.
He was really cool. He's like, well, I can grade it right now. I was like, yeah, that's kind of what I want. I was like, thank God. But to me, it was always like, I mean, so many friends were like in marketing or like some dumb major. Or not dumb major, but like major where you don't have to show up as much. And so, but I mean, I guess I had a lot of friends who were engineering. That was always more intense. But for me, it's just like, yeah, man, I got a degree in this. That says something. And
biochemistry is one of those, like, intimidating majors. I mean, that's a pretty substantial. When you look at popular science now and you're kind of disappointed and like, all right, well, this car is going to have whatever type cell
that's
battery.
Aerodynamic.
What are you missing? What do you want to see? New discoveries? New.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, maybe I'm more into, like, drugs, but also, like, the universe and, yeah, discoveries and...
Yeah, I think there's, like, it seems like a pretty... I don't know what the right word is. I don't want to say, like, saturated, but there's definitely right now, like, a high point for people, by and large, being interested in the smallest scale of discovering what bacteria can do and different cultures and different digestion or intestinal tracts and what it's doing to people. And
like, I thought one of the most interesting discoveries I feel like that I've read about in a while is the whole, like, peanut allergy, how they, like, discovered it's from, like, antibiotic over prescription in young babies and infants. And that's because, you know, when we grew up, there wasn't, like, everyone had peanut allergies, and now, like, so many we do, and they, you know, figured it out. They, like, did some research, and they're like, oh, yeah, it's from over, you know, prescribing, overuse of antibiotics in young children.
I'll bet you'll be met with some skepticism. Ooh, with that.
For sure. That's like lots of hot beds, antibiotics, children.
Yeah, vaccines.
Allergies.
People, that's the thing that science does, like you were talking about with your professor kind of saying, do the pros and cons. Like, do pro and con on the theory of gravity. Mm-hmm. You're like, well, that's ridiculous. Do it. Like, you'll start to find more things in there that you're suddenly like, hey, I can get into this paper. Yeah. Now I'm one of the flat earth people. I'm going to join that society.
Well, I also feel like marketing trumps everything. Like, all those juice cleanses, like, there's zero science behind it, but it's all marketing. Like, toxins. The people that, you know, people argue, like, oh, but get rid of the toxins. Like, no, you don't have toxins hanging out in your intestines for 20 years. You'd be dead. Like, but it, like, has, you know, it does not matter. It's a $1 billion industry because they like told people it did what they
but
want.
Where are you learning this?
I think it was just obvious to me. I think people are tricked by it because they're like, oh, and then like, you know, I shit a lot. You're like, well, just take a laxative. Like, that's all it's doing.
Wait, laxatives make you poop more. Oh, I see what you're saying.
When people do cleanses, they're like, oh, I got rid of all this stuff. It's like, that's because you weren't eating and you were just drinking this weird thing. Like, if you just, I think it just, you know, causes some kind of physical change. And therefore, people think like, it worked. It's good. It's are doing you... something good. But I just feel like, marketing trumps science. Like,
well, I think there's like obviously memes and people seeing someone else be healthier or and going,
and maybe it's all psychological. Like, you know, I had a friend, she's like, well, I don't know, but I feel like I have more energy when I do the cleanse. I was like, so maybe it's just about, you know, the marketing is telling you and it's affecting your psychology and you do have more energy. So maybe it's just like having the right marketing to trick you.
I don't know about, I don't feel like they're marketed a lot though.
Cleanses? I think it is.
I hear people,
like juices, juice cleanses.
I hear people talk
about
them.
Maybe it's bigger, it might be bigger in Austin. I mean, I'm sure it's big, a subculture here, but it's, I feel like more people, I mean, I hear all the time, friends do. Like, friends I wouldn't think are like, yeah, we're going to go on a juice cleanse before this.
Hmm. Yeah, it's weird. You'd think LA would be synonymous with that, but
I think maybe they are just like a certain subculture. Maybe you're not seeing, or maybe it was just like 10 years ago. Maybe Austin's just getting it. Our hippies are.
Well, I mean, there's the placebo effect, obviously, and there's power in that, and then the nocebo effect. If you think something's not there, then people, like, so many people have adopted like a gluten intolerance, which is just a wheat mild intolerance a lot of times. Obviously, some people have like celiac.
Yeah, I mean, that, I feel like that's part of a marketing. Like, somebody was like, I felt better when I ate gluten. And then, like, you're like, oh, yeah.
But I think, I mean, I've never done those things. And I think the reason I wouldn't or don't is I think I do need, I'd like to think that there's a spiritual element. Like, what is the human body capable of if it thinks something's there? If it thinks there's a carrot.
Yeah, I think there is a lot that factors into that stuff.
Because I would look at it from a purely kind of like, well, we are this, you know, organism that is comprised of minerals and a lot of water, cells. It needs to be hydrated. It needs this amount of like protein and carbohydrates and some sugars and fats or whatever you put in. To think that like, oh, if you deplete a bunch of those and really only go like fruits and vegetables and the natural sugars that occur in those and the natural carbohydrates maybe or whatever, and you do and you mush it all down and then you drink it for like a week straight, you're going to be amazed. I just look at it as like, why? I can't really see it. Maybe I should try it and then be like, whoa, there is something.
Yeah.
Like,
I am into that, the drink that's like just nutrients. I think they called it Soylent Green or something like that. That I'm into.
Like the green machine?
Because sometimes I just... No, so there's some company that makes some powder, which literally has exactly the protein, fiber, like everything you... They just like put it all in so you could just drink it and be done.
Ah.
And that I'm kind of into because sometimes I just... Sometimes there are afternoons where like, I just... I mean, I like eating, but if I could like a couple times a week when I'm busy, just like drink that for lunch and be done and not have to cook.
Just
or,
all
like,
your food and
just have a powder. Like sometimes you're just like, ugh. Yeah, I don't want to think about how to get the protein and everything. I'm just like,
that
I want
seems
dumb food blocks to gnaw on.
I wonder if people like cooking shows being so popular mm-hmm. and chefs being really treated like royalty is a rebuttal to, well, clearly in the future people are going to understand that we just need a certain amount of grams mm-hmm. or a certain number of grams of protein, blah, 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 blah. So just take a pill and move on with your day. Mm-hmm. And now people are going, no, there's something romantic about like knowing where your food comes from, mm-hmm. going out to the farm and knowing like this is the grass that the animals ate. It was killed humanely. Mm-hmm. People go, yeah, now I can eat it. And yet if that were transferred all the way to like, this is that same meal in pill form. It's all the ingredients you'd ever want. You can't taste any of it, mm-hmm. but nutritionally, you're going to be good. I think people, that sort of cultural evolution is a long way off.
Yeah, but I feel like there is a market. I think somebody, yeah, this is all for someone who read the article saying, I mean, I think the appeal is for like a lot of tech people and people who work a lot who are like, oh yeah, I just mm-hmm. like, I don't have time. I don't have the money to just hire, you know, constantly be getting like healthy fast food all the time. Like right. I just want to
healthy fast food.
Chug this real quick, you know. I think there's people who just don't like to cook and don't care about food.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something weird there about like, you know, where are we meant to go? Where are we meant mm-hmm. to evolve to? You know, if you work all the time and you think my job's important to me, my life is important, I don't have time to eat. And other people, when you go to older cultures where they would say being with your family and sitting down together and creating mm-hmm. a meal and drinking good wine, I think we all kind of romanticize that, or at least yeah. if nothing else, reflect positively on it and go, yeah, that does seem to be pretty mm-hmm. good culturally. It seems to be good for the soul. You laugh a lot, you share, mm-hmm. kind of have a dinner every night and talk about what's bugging you. And yet people would say, no, that's antiquated. Really what's important is branding and market strategy and me getting my job done.
Creating.
I mean, but yeah.
When are they going to make a pill to do the dishes? Am I right? That's girl.
If they, I get, yeah, I mean, that feeds back on how people are wired up. You know, I want to take a pill form because I'm a painter and I can't stop painting. I paint all day, yeah. every day. It has nothing to do with whether or not I think sitting down for dinner every night is a good thing. Yeah.
I don't think it's an absolute thing. It's like sometimes I'm going to chug this shake because I don't feel like thinking because mm-hmm. I'm doing something. But then I do want to have dinner where I hang out. Like I want to.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, as a biochemist, you know, saying like, mm-hmm. understanding this sort of,
I think I established that I understand what's going on from earlier in the podcast.
You're one of the more knowledgeable earth scientists and biochemists I've ever heard of, let alone you're on top of every component.
You're onto something where this podcast is just interviewing people what they majored in college, but like 10 years later when they're just like chef, then they're just like work at a coffee shop or something trying to remember what happened in Ulysses.
I think that's a good component. No one's really ever, yeah. No one's really attacked that angle before. Yeah. Like, what do you know? What do you remember? What do you, like, because, yeah.
I was so into science. I didn't necessarily think I'd forget all this, but.
Did you forget it, or does it just appeal to you in a way now where it's not as critical to know every little detail? Or do you genuinely feel bad?
I'm going to go home and, like, read my old biochemistry textbook and just know, because just the way I'll feel satisfied. I'm like, oh, okay. That's what I got right, and that's what I got wrong. Yeah,
okay. Because you want to have that knowledge in your head. Mm-hmm. And right now you feel like it's eluding you.
Yeah.
All. Yeah, that makes sense. I think everybody does. There's nothing worse than when you're at a social place or social gathering, and something comes up and you go, I actually studied that, and and you just start treading water, yeah. and going, ah, shit, I don't remember yeah. anything.
God, I regret not taking a language. Kids who listen to this podcast, take a language when you're young. Mm-hmm. I tried to learn Spanish recently and kind of gave up.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay with Spanish, but I used to be so good.
That's the thing. I, you know, 4 years, and it's like, I'm probably back to like level two.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I am. You revert back to probably right where you started. Mm-hmm. Well, I know Nino means this, and mm-hmm. I know.
I can kind of, you know.
Yeah. But with science, it's not a language, because it was, as a kid, it was kind of, if you're interested in it, it was like kids who were brought up in a bilingual household, and it just starts getting imprinted mm-hmm. on them. Were your parents science-y'd? I mean, did you start being exposed to it at a young age?
No, I mean, my dad was a math guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was mostly, I mean, I did watch Nova a lot as a child. I think it was just kind of a thing in school that I just slowly ended up in. I mean, I honestly was like really into every subject. Like mm-hmm. the idea of being a writing major appealed to me for me that felt like a cop out
mm-hmm.
or like something I could do on my own. Like, and I yeah. still took, you know, classes in that, you know, in literature and stuff, but it's just like, well, I'm going to read books anyway, but I'm not going to like be able to figure out science. And so... So, yeah, I think I was just, honestly, like, I think it was just, like, a thirst for knowledge. And, like, I think I was really existential and interested in the universe and, like, what the hell was going on.
Biochemistry is a good process, I would imagine, to get into that, to mm-hmm. know
yeah.
not just about, you know, you don't really learn as much about the universe necessarily, but
well, you
know,
do, because you have to take, like, I mean, I had to take, like, all the physics classes, so, you know, I got into the theoretical physics and the mm-hmm. quantum mechanics and stuff like
that. Is there a need with that to for them to teach you, essentially, if there was, say, a Big Bang leading, you need to know all the steps that led up to the primordial mm-hmm. soup, up to humans and...
Yeah. Yeah, why? I don't know why we had to take so much physics, but I took more physics than, I mean, I took very little biology and took more physics.
That's weird. I mean, I can understand that you, to kind of go, mm-hmm. our matter is the same as that, mm-hmm. but it doesn't make sense on a math level. Like, physically, we don't behave the particles inside of us.
I think it gets down to, like, electrons and all that stuff.
No. So, you understand Protons. The atomic structure of a human being?
I mean, I did at one point. I mean, I don't want to go through what I went through earlier, but, yeah, I mean, there was, I mean, I technically did learn a lot about that. Like,
so do you trip out and wondering where your atoms end?
I mean, I think sometimes when I start thinking about it, it's like, oh, it's all just like orbiting, like the electrons are just orbiting around and we just have like a kind of theoretical model of where they are.
Yeah, because they're not really orbiting. They're just kind of popping into existence here and there.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh, we just have kind of like this probability model. And it's just like, bleh.
It's just
it's
like,
a lot.
Bleh. So you don't... I'm trying to think... You haven't really given me a glimpse into, like, what do you think humanity is? What do you think life is? Do you believe in God? What do you think the meaning of this is?
You know, I have gotten into arguments. I remember going out with this guy, and he was arguing, like... You know, if you're a scientist, you can't believe in God. I'm like, well, that's not true because, I mean, the whole thing is like, okay, there's science, but, like, you know, you can figure out the parts and this made this, but there's still a first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody, you know, science doesn't explain where nothing became something. I mean, that's something that, you know, science does not explain. It's very against, you know, nothing creating mm-hmm. something. So there's still, like, you know, you can go back to the Big Bang, but, like, what created the components that made all that?
Yeah.
So I feel like it's very easy to still be religious and into science.
But where do you fall on it?
This is like me going back to this argument I had with this guy on this one date, making it right. See, I am right. I don't remember if I explained it as well on that date.
That guy, you really should.
Where do I fall? I mean, I sometimes don't think about it too much because then I get depressed. But I feel like, the thing though, like, you can go back as far as you want, but still, it started with something. So something had to make something. And God, it's so confusing to me. Where could that have come from?
Yeah.
And so, God, it's
I don't
a mystery,
like that they've created.
And like, death
that.
Depresses me, and like, I just don't know.
What if that is kind of a roadblock put up? Who knows by what? Mm-hmm. Maybe say a god creature or something that. If you do start thinking about it too much, it's like staring at the sun mm-hmm. and your mind puts up all these blanks and goes, I'm depressed. I'm, mm-hmm. I have anxiety now all of a sudden. I'm way too anxious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's empty.
and you got to keep pushing through. You got to keep going. Yeah. No, this is part of it. This is like, yeah. This is what they put up in any good gauntlet.
Yeah.
As you get closer to sort of the end of the search, more bad guys, yeah. more things put up in the yeah. way.
Yeah. To me, there's like no way to explain it. You know, I try to look for, like, magic on this plane where it's just, like, You know, I love stories of coincidence, or like, you know, reading too much into love or all those things. Like, there's so much unexplainable. That means there could be something beyond what I can comprehend.
It's weird when you're around. I mean, you should go to Venice Beach while you're here, and the spiritual people will be down there. And man, it's energy, and we're all connected, and it's magical.
I went to a, what was it called? It was basically like a spiritual convention in Los Angeles. It was called a conscious living conference or whatever. And it's kind of like every kind of subculture of spirituality was there.
That sounds just my speed.
It was really funny. It was really funny, really interesting. I wish I would have went to more of the talks. Some of them were like, you know, there's like a talk on aliens. And then like I went to one that was all about like getting to a higher level. And it was all about like, we have all these things we're not activating. Vibration was the key, apparently. And then she went into, like, you know, what's keeping us from the next level, and people are like, fluoride. And she's like, yes. And it's like, television way. She's like, unplug your TV when you're not watching it.
You know, Tesla had basically all of his patents stolen from him. He died with no money. There's no audio recording of his voice, and yet he, ahead of Marconi, pretty much invented the radio. Had his lab burned down. The cops came one time, and he'd invented this frequency device, because he was determined that everything had a frequency, and he could find the frequency in anything. He placed it on a girder of this building, and the entire building started just shaking more and more and more and more and more, and people were freaking out. And the cops showed up, and they took this device from him, probably destroyed it, or maybe took it to the Defense Department. He was convinced that he could destroy the world. He could destroy Earth if he found its frequency. And there's something there, like, for someone that was so scientific and so knowledgeable and figured out these vibrations and these harmonies, whatever they are, the fact that, like, music resonates with human beings, the fact that, like, repetition and music can a lot of ways be broken down into mathematical, well, it's just this repeating, or it's this cycle, or those things are fascinating, I think, to everyone on some level, and yet we just ignore them and go, well, we can't connect them. We don't, there's nothing that's been as visible to religious people as the Bible is. There's nothing in the science world that's like, here's this one book that unites all that stuff and kind of gives everyone a semblance of, oh, that's why it's both oddly unique and amazing to be a human being and utterly frustrating. Is those two things in unison?
Yeah. Yeah. Music, you mean like the magic of 311?
Finally worked it back in. Yeah. Oh, there's that D plus high five. Well done. That was great. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I mean, I feel like the more you study science, the more mystery and the more spiritual you might get.
I had a, you know, higher level mathematics, and like the guy you were talking to saying, well, if you believe in science, you certainly can't believe in this. And it's almost like C.S. Lewis was a weird guy in that way, that basically like tune people out if they're trying to apply their reasoning and their intellect, which is such a weird word that someone using their intellect would be unacceptable in an argument against you, and everything has to be broken down into an argument, because a lot of people are raised with that, hey, it's either this or that, there's a winner and a loser, it's either you choose this side or you're on that side. And that's so baffling, that, you know, when you're in higher level places of learning, there are people walking around with crosses around their neck. There are people of every religious discipline, and they kind of go, yeah, math is really fascinating and physics are really fascinating. And we associate them with never being attached to anything that doesn't just acknowledge, well, it was a big bang and it's all about a crock of shit. And I had this math teacher that was like, yeah, I just go out and like watch nature, man. He's such a hippie. But he was like, it's all math, man. And I thought that was, he probably feels differently now that he's a little older, you know. But at the time I was like, oh, I want to get to that level. I want to get to where I understand math so well that I can kind of see it everywhere around me. Just almost like the Matrix kind of. And that's a stupid comparison, or I mean, that's a dumb analogy to equate it to, because I think it's more than that. It's not just binary shaping the world, but more so like the patterns and the symphony, kind of like the harmonies all. It'd be amazing if you could kind of see that code. And I think everyone in physics that wants to make a name for themselves, that's what they're trying to do, is like find that equation that goes, ah, this is, E equals MC squared resonated with a lot of people, and I don't think any of us really, we don't really get it, but we could.
Cool. Hopefully, yeah, soon. All right. Well,
so we don't.
I got Netflix to watch. Let's figure out this universe.
Yeah, what would we do? What would we? What do you think would happen if they just, like, the sky opened up, some voice boomed in and said, like, yeah, it's this, and then we all checked our math and went, that's it?
Yeah, I feel like we don't want to know the secret, because what if it's real, what if it's just like, it's the end, and you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, I think that's how it would be. I mean, if something resonated with you and just seemed like an ultimate truth, and that's why people get lost in their religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm jealous of those people.
It's like, I'm not, because I
would love to be content with death, I guess.
I think you would, you know, have you ever known a religious person that was like in their mid-80s and they snapped out of it and they kind of suddenly went, this is all bullshit.
I would like to be till death. Content with my religion and content with death. Like, yeah, I know it's gonna be okay. I'm just scared of death.
I wish. I think that if I could, adopt one kind of, you know, tenet or something, that'd be great. But I would just always change.
Yeah,
I think like the sky opening up and aliens or whoever kind of being, we were studying you, and we wanted to know what it is to be human, what your thoughts are, and it wasn't good enough to watch you and examine you. We had to develop smartphones. We had to develop this social interaction so you could essentially explain your thoughts anytime you had one. And we cultivated that data, and we got it. We got all we need. Thanks for all those pictures of yourselves. Thanks for all those stupid tweets. We're going to close up shop now. And then we'd all kind of like, but I was headed to the, I had a party to go to. And they're like, no, we're done. We got it. And then maybe you'd just see the sun growing and growing and growing. And then everyone would look at each other like, that's, and that was it. That could be for the next week, my current religion. And then something else will come up and I'm like, that wasn't too good. But for the time being, that would kind of make sense to me, or kind of go, oh yeah, I bet it's something like that. Any final thoughts? No. Want to expound on that?
No.
No,
I just feel like scared of death. End of story.
Final summation thoughts of Carrie Lindo or Larry Kendo.
Kind of remembers college biology.
And scared of death. Scared to death of death. Scared to death of death. Carrie Lindo, Larry Kendo, my oldest open mic friend. I think, no, Mark Atkinson is, but one of my longest tenured, I shouldn't say oldest, longest tenured. Yeah. We've known each other through comedy for a long time.
Oh, the places we've gone.
Yes, we have, and you're doing great, and I'm happy to see you and chat with you, and thanks for this delicious Shiner Bock from the hardworking folks in Shiner, Texas.
Oh, the people of Shiner, Texas will love this podcast.
They really will. Delicious beer. If you find yourself in Texas, get yourself some Shiner Bock. It's quite good.
They make interesting seasonal. Right now it's prickly pear Shiner Bock.
Ooh, that's from Leaving Las Vegas, I think. Oh. I am like a prickly pear.
Okay, yeah, not the beer, but yeah, the word prickly pear is in Leaving Las Vegas. I'll give you that.
He popularized it. Nicolas Cage, and he stands out, he falls to that glass and he stands up and goes, I'm like a prickly pear.
That's a good Cage.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Yeah, he's just gonna do it really.
It's a little Brando.
No, Brando's more like, I thought he was more like slow.
Okay, you're
Nicolas
right.
Nicolas Cage is a little more like frantic.
Yeah, frantic Brando.
All right, Larry Kendo, cool. Let's get out of here. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks again to Carrie Lindo. Always fun chatting with her. She'll be on the show Wednesday in Austin. So if you check davidhunsberger.com, go to the show's page, the tour winds up this week. So Tuesday night in Houston, Wednesday in Austin, Thursday in Dallas, and then final stop and a living room show. Very intimate setting in Phoenix. If you go to the website, you can find out, or my website, you can find out information there about how to get to that show. So it's an off-market venue. Should be really fun. There's going to be snacks and boozes and all kinds of assorted goods and some comedy. So come out and say hello. It'd be good to wrap that up, and then I'll get back to
a more steady schedule and hopefully not be so disjointed. Hopefully I haven't been too much. But anyway, thanks for voting at thespacecave.com. Thanks for rating the show and subscribing and all those things that help get the word out there about it. I appreciate it. And if you want to be on the show, if you have something to talk about or that you feel like you would you know someone who would, go to thespacecave.com and use the contact page and we'll set it up. And my headphones broke. If you want to help out towards something like that, there is a donate button. I feel weird having that there, but it's up there if you feel like you want to chip in. So I'm doing the show no headphones currently, but when I get home I'll have another pair. So don't feel like I'm completely underprepared. I just my Rode phones broke. Anyway, you guys, you space burgers, thanks for listening to the show. If you have new music, if you have a friend that has a band and you like it, or you have a band, or you just found a song and you want to have it sort of featured, let me know. Send it my way, and I'd love to play it out. And right now, yeah, I think we'll do one from the Lonely Wild Los Angeles band. Thanks again to Dylan in Nashville for cluing us into them, and I hope you like this song. And this one's called Who's Calling by the Lonely Wild. Thanks for visiting the Space Cave.